Okay, so today is the 22nd of October, 2018. It is the 13th of Mar Cheshvan, Tafshin Ayin Tes, and we are up to Halacha Day of Parakei. So now, while the bulk of Parakei has to do with So while the bulk of Parakei discusses the issue of Parsha Sotah, I would like to focus on the first couple of psukim, that's with the issue of dividing up the machanos. And now we spoke about the other day how one issue goes into the next, and into the next, and into the next. That was, I guess, Thursday morning shir. But one of the major issues that shows up there in the beginning is the issue of that people that are tameh have to be sent out of the machanos. And who are those people? Tzarua, Zav, and Tamei Lenefesh. Somebody who is a Mitzora, somebody who is a Zav, and somebody who is a Tamei Lenefesh. Now, it sounds like if you want to just read the psukim without reading any of them before Shaman, it sounds like all three of those dudes have to be out of all three of the machanos, that they all have to be sent out. However, Rashi points out, and we learn out through the Torah Shabbal Peh, that no, it's broken up. Different ones have different requirements as to where, how far out they need to go. Now, it's interesting that the pasuk doesn't even go in order. The pasuk goes tzarua. The tzarua has to be out of all of the machanos, right? Our image of the person who has tzaras is out in the field someplace, not included, not involved in any of the cities. Mm-hmm. And then there is the zav. Oh, I'm sorry, it is in the right order. The Zav is excluded from what we refer to as the Machane Levia. And then we have the Tamei Lenefesh, the person who is Tamei Leguf, is Tamei to a mace, who is impure because of the dead. So that person is excluded only from the Azara, but seems like they are permitted in the Machane Levia. Now, there is... what is the topic that we want to discuss? It sounds like it's pretty out there. How does it really apply today? So it is very relevant today with regards to the issue of, it sits in the center of the issue of, if it is permissible to go up to Har HaBayis today. Is such a thing allowed? Now, we don't have tzaras, so we're not kicking anyone out of entire cities, but do we kick people out of what we would consider to be Machane Levia? Now, what is Machane Levia? So in the Midbar, Machane Levia was the place where the Levium all lived, right? The Levium all lived in what we refer to as Machane Levia, which is the area immediately surrounding the Mishkan. Now, what would that correspond to then in terms of historical Yerushalayim or modern day Yerushalayim, the facts of Yerushalayim? So where does it lay? How do we figure that out? So there are Mishnayos. The very first parak in Maseches Kalim discusses the idea that there are Eser Kedushas Hain. That from this pasuk, it seems like there are three levels of Kedusha, but in fact there are 10. However, those 10 are not necessarily all Doraisa. They're broken down. Some are Doraisa, some are Durabunan, etc. And as one gets in, so the Har HaBayis, and a couple of Mishnayos later, as it's going down its list, as the Har HaBayis is more sanctified, Shein Zavim B'Zavos Nidos V'Yoldos Nichnasin L'Shan. That Zavim and Zavos, Nidos and Yoldos, those are all considered people that are Tamei Hayotze Min Haguf. Those are tumos that exit from the body. Those could be both male and female, right? Nidos and Zavos and Yoldos are all female. Zavim would be male. So those are all permitted onto Har HaBayis, but they're not permitted past the Chel. What is the Chel? So the Chel is this fence that surrounded the Azara. So if we had a very large picture of the Har HaBayis, as we would, which I didn't set up for you, but the famous picture of the Har of the Beis HaMikdash is the picture with the big building, which has the Aron and then the Kelim that are inside of it, which one cannot see from the outside. Still recording, okay. And then beyond that, and then surrounding that is the outdoor part, which has the big Mizbeach, and it has the Ezras Nashim, and then surrounding all of that was a fence called the Chel. Now the Chel is not required on a level of the Raisa, that is entirely the Rabbanan thing in order to keep people out of the Azara. And there was a sign there. The sign on it said, all those that have Tameh Hayotzi Min Haguf, as well as Gayim, are not permitted past this wall over here. Now, how do we know that there is such a sign? So one of the ways that we know that there is such a sign is that the Mishnah tells us that there is such a sign. But beyond that, we actually have the sign. The sign exists today. I think I saw in one of the articles I looked at for today's year, there is one of these pillars that had this writing on it, or most of the writing on it at least, is in the Rockefeller Museum. Where is the Rockefeller Museum? Anybody here ever been to the Rockefeller Museum? Probably not. What?
In New York.
No, the Rockefeller Center Museum in Yerushalayim. Where is the Rockefeller Museum in Yerushalayim? It is actually in the Arab Quarter, but it pre-exists the War for Independence.
Right.
So in fact, that museum exists. That was actually where the 59th paratrooper unit, the unit that went in order to liberate the Harabayas and the Kotel. So that's actually where they spent the night before. The attack began at night. The most brutal fighting was all at night. They were under attack at night. Someone actually, if one could read in Like Dreamers, in the very beginning it describes what the attack was like. There was one wrong, they didn't know their way. They didn't have maps. They didn't know where they were going. It was like, here, anybody ever been to Yerushalayim before? And some people raised their hands to try. So they made one wrong turn, which actually ended up into a death trap where they lost, I don't remember, but tens of soldiers died there. But then they retreated into this Rockefeller Museum. They stayed there for the night. They rested there. And the next morning, is when they set out in order to redeem Harabayis. And by the next morning, the Arabs had all, for the most part, gotten out of there. There was probably because their attack at night wasn't completely successful, they were not able to surround the city, which left a gap, which permitted the soldiers to get out of there, which they did, which allowed the Jewish
which
soldiers to
then lives.
Which actually ended up saving lives, correct.
Back to
they didn't.
Song.
But anyways.
Back
but
the, song.
Yes.
Must have come from.
They wrote it. What do you mean it must have come? It was in the Harabayis. It was in the Beis HaMikdash.
But it was in Hebrew?
I believe it was in multi languages. I believe. You can take a look on the internet. You can find it. I'm sure you can find a picture of it there.
The
because, yeah, that would, we assume that would be from the Second Temple, correct?
So that could have been Greek, could have been
Hebrew. I believe it was in multi language,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay, but anyway, so there was this chel which kept people. Okay, so anyways, there was this wall that kept people out. They weren't permitted to go past that. Now that wall obviously is only talking about things on a level of derabanan, not on a level of deraisa, right? It would only be a derabanan ideal. But yet that is the wall that is placed in as described by the Mishnayos for where these people are not allowed to go by. After that, so then. Okay, fine. So after that, they would be in violation of deraisa. They would be chayav karis for going in past that. So now, if we then extrapolate that to bizman hazeh, so we assume that the kedusha that existed during the time of the Beis HaMikdash would so. One possibility is that actually went away. The Ari showed him that perhaps assume, I wouldn't say for sure assume, but perhaps assume that, okay, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so the Kedusha is gone. There's no more Kedusha there. But the opinion that we generally assume like, or at least that we are certainly that we are Machmir like, is the opinion of the Rambam, which is that Kedusha lasid lavo, that the Kedusha continues to live on even into the future. There is Kedusha on the Har Havayis, as there was during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. However, we would not assume that it expanded any more than it was back then. Right? That would be our assumption. So in order for, if a person would want to go up to Har HaBayis, so they would have to figure out how do the rules apply during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and how would they then apply today? Okay? And therefore, how would, and then how, where is, whoever those places are on the Har HaBayis, how would that then apply today? So do we know how big Har HaBayis was, and do we know how big the Beis HaMikdash was, at least Herod's Beis HaMikdash? So the answer is, yes, we do know. We have recordings in the Mishnayos as to how large the that place was, and the Mishnayos tell us that it was the Har HaBayis was a 500 amos by 500 amos. So if you want to take out your calculator and figure that out, 500 amos equals 500 amos, right? Which means that it would be what shape? A square, right? So if we take a bird's eye view of Har HaBayis as we imagine it today, what shape is it? It's a square, Alan.
It's a cube.
It's a mountain. The mountain was, when we assume that Herod, when he built the very large Beis HaMikdash structure that we have today, he plowed off the top,
yeah,
right, and developed the supporting walls on the side. In fact, the kotel that we go to is probably not actually a wall of the Beis HaMikdash, but it's a support for the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, but okay, right? But if you take a look, if you go up to Har HaZeisim, Har HaTzofim, and take a look down on Har HaBayis, or take a look at any of those pictures, look down on Har HaBayis, right, it is not a square at all, right? It is a, it's not even a rectangle, it is a Trapezoid is like a rhomboid, diamond, right?
Rhomboid.
No, a rhomboid is also. That means that it's a square to the side. Well, it's not, a quadrangle, not, okay, I think. Maybe a parallelogram. I forget my 10th grade geometry. But anyways, the different sides are actually inconsistent in size. But anyways, it certainly is not a square. It's not even close to a square. Now, how do we then reconcile that with a Mishnah in Maseches Tamid? So there are those that suggest that, well, first of all, if you go from east to west, right, east to west, from the Kotel to the wall opposite the Kotel, the eastern wall of Har HaBayis, so that is a little bit more than 500 amos. It's approximately 500 amos. So the question is that there seems to have been an expansion to the north and expansion to the south, and that could very well be. We do have recordings of Herod certainly adding on to the north and to the south,
built up the land.
Yeah, that's what that is. So in theory, those areas one could even claim is not even Har HaBayis. So one could go from the Via Dolorosa, which is the northern street bordering on the Har HaBayis, and walk sort of onto Har HaBayis, and it's not really Har HaBayis. It's this expansion that was made beyond the purview of what is Har HaBayis. But I'm not sure one would want to take that risk. We could assume that everything inside those walls where the signs are that say no Jews are allowed beyond this point, let's assume that that is considered Har HaBayis. Is it true that no Jews are permitted there beyond that point? So probably not, right? In terms of strict halacha. The strict halacha is what? If one is tummy makes, is one permitted on Har HaBayis? If one is Tummy Meis, is one permitted Har HaBayis? So the equivalent, again, what's the equivalent of Har HaBayis? The equivalent of Har HaBayis is Machane Levia. That's where Moshe Aaron lived, right? Were people allowed there that were Tummy Meis? So the Gemara points out, not only were people allowed there that were Tummy Meis, there were Meis there. Who was the Meis that was there?
Son?
No. Who was the Meis that was there that resided in Machane Levia? Anybody know? Yes! Yosef, right? The Atzmos Yosef. That's Atzmos Yosef Imo, that he took the Atzmos Yosef, and Atzmos Yosef stayed with Moshe. So Gemara makes that point. The Gemara says, not only are people Tummy Meis allowed in Machane Levia, which we would now consider the equivalent of Har HaBayis, right? There was Meis itself in Machane Levia, which we would now consider to be the equivalent of Har HaBayis. Where is one not permitted to go if they are Tummy Meis? Into the Azara. Right, so that sign said one is not permitted beyond this post if one is Tamei Meis, if one has the Tuma of the, if one is either not Jewish or if they are Tamei Meis. Right, can we get out of our Tumas Meis B'zman Hazeh? So probably not. Right, why not? Right, in order to get out of Tamei Meis, one needs a Parah Aduma, and despite all the efforts of this farmer in Lakewood, New Jersey, right, that didn't work out. Okay, you saw, you know what I'm talking about?
I thought he was in Texas.
No, there's one in Lakewood, near Lakewood, a couple, you know, an hour or two away from Lakewood. There was a farmer that had a red cow, but apparently they found it to be pregnant, and that apostles the red cow. Okay, who is not then allowed to go into that area? So not the Tumas Meis, but this person who has what we call Tumas Hayotze Min Haguf. So do we have Tumas Hayotze Min Haguf Bizman Hazeh? So the answer is absolutely. Right, a woman who is a nida, a woman who menstruates, is considered to have tumas hayotzi min haguf. Right, a woman who gives birth is considered to have tumas hayotzi min haguf. Right, can males get tumas hayotzi min haguf? So at first glance, we would assume to be the answer is yes. That any time a man ejaculates, so that is considered tumas keri, and that is a tumas hayotzi min haguf, and should have all these halachos. The only problem is that it's not mentioned explicitly here. When the Rambam lists the people that are, when the Mishnah lists the group of people, we read the list before, that list included people that are zavim, zavos, nidos, vyoldos, right? Excluding the Tumas Keri. And in fact, the Rambam, in his recording of who's allowed to go onto the mountain, the Rambam appears in Hilchos Beis HaMechira Zayin Tesvav, right? His list includes people that are Har HaBayis Mekayesh Mimenu She'ein Zavin V'Zavos Nidos V'Yoldos Niftasim L'Mashan. What is conspicuously absent from that? A Baal Keri. Now, the commentary on him, the Mishnah L'Melech, says, no, it meant to include that. And in fact, the Rambam elsewhere seems to include that as well. The Rambam elsewhere seems to include that they would make sure that They would make sure that the Baal Keris like wouldn't get onto our bayis, like that was on their list. But for some reason, it's conspicuously absent from the Rambam's list is the issue of a Baal Keri. Now, that's the bad news. And the good news is that one could become tahor from any of these things. Right? How does one become tahor from these things? You go to the mikvah, right? If one goes to the mikvah, so then they're pure, right? They're now clean once again. Right? And so there's two issues with that to keep in mind, though. Number one is that, okay, how do we ensure that you don't become tummy again before you go up to Har HaBayis? Now, is that a major concern? So the answer is yes, but let's just get to the other issue first. The other issue is the issue of that the person is, after the person goes to the mikvah, so they actually aren't considered completely pure. They are actually given a status called a tevul yom.
Yeah.
There are two things. There are tevul yom and a mechusar kippurim. Right. There's three things that a person needs to do in order to become pure. They A, have to go to the mikvah. B, they have to often bring a korban depending on what kind of tumah they have. And C, they need to wait for it to be evening. So the korban is not necessarily ma'akev for them to be able to go places. It might be ma'akev for them to be able to eat things, right? But waiting until nighttime seems to be ma'akev to go. That is what's mentioned actually in the Mishnah about that a tevul yom is not permitted there. However, the Gemara points out that might only be a Gezerah, that was added on by Yehoshaphat, who was one of the Yehuda kings, that he enacted that as a Gezerah, that a Tevul Yom couldn't go to those places. And Tosfos on that daf in Maseches Pesachim, which I forgot to write down here, the number of, I think, daf Pei Zion, I think, is where that Gemara appears, in Maseches Pesachim, so that he says there that, Tosfos says that only applies to going into the Azara and not going on to Har HaBayis. So the Tevul Yom status would exclude him from the Azara, but does not exclude him from Har HaBayis. So far, right, we have no...
What you have to do is go to the mikvah.
You have to go to the mikvah.
Because
right.
You link all of this together.
Right, it seems like you should, that if you go to the mikvah, so then you'll be okay. Now there is one more concern, and that appears... in Hilchos Hafrashas Chala, of all places, which appears in Hilchos Pesach. There it is, yes. In Hilchos Pesach, it discusses taking Chala off, right, removing Chala from a batch of dough, yeah. Right? So what do you do with that Chala that you take off? So the minug is... Those that make challah at their homes, if you're making enough, if you're making a 5 pound, usually we assume a 5 pound bag of flour is enough to obligate one to take off challah. So what do? You take a portion off. Often the woman does, but if a man was doing it, he would do it too. Takes off a portion of dough, says this is the challah, and then what does he do with that sanctified piece of challah? Douses it in the minhag in our house is to douse it in detergent, not detergent, in bleach. Well, actually, first she Chava burns it, and then puts it in fire, burns it, and then we put some dishwashing soap around it, so it's no longer edible, and throw it in the garbage. Right? That's what we do with the sanctified piece of challah. But what is one really supposed to be doing with that piece of challah? It's supposed to go to a kohen. So what about giving it to a kohen? So I am not in the right place here. I thought I was on the right amid here, but I'm not. Tough iron. Tough nun zayin. Okay, not the bayin zayin. There we go. So what does the Shulchan Aruch recommend to do? So he recommends that Shim Yikra Lashem Ein Rishay Lafosa Vim Yinachet Akach Tach Mitzvah Ein Rishay Lestar for Biyom Tov, right? Vim Shachav Akara Lashem Yitlen Letzonim V'yichmen Al Nahach. That if you bake on Yantif, so you're not allowed to burn it, so you got to put it aside, etc. What does the Mechaber not mention? The Mechaber does not mention giving it to a Kohen. Comes the Raman and says, V'im yesh Kohen katan shalo ra'a keri, o gadol shetavo l'kiryo, mutarim lefo sachal b'shvilo. The Raman says that if you have a Kohen who is a katan that has never seen semen, or he is an adult but went to the mikvah to take care of it, he is permitted, you're allowed to permit to bake on his behalf and give it to him. V'yesh omer, however, she'ein ma'achin l'chal b'zman hazeh l'shem kohen. That you shouldn't really do this, give it to a kohen at all b'zman hazeh. And some say that maybe it's mutter, because in theory you could give it, having to do with baking, etc. But the Ramah quotes a machlokes that maybe you could give it to the kohen, and some say that you can't. So the Mishnah Berurah says, well, it says, what's going on here? So Mishnah Berurah says, first of all, in Eretz Yisrael, one is not permitted to give it to a kohen, because that's considered chal d'oraisa, and that a tamei mace is not permitted to eat. The Ramah is only talking about challah outside of Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz La'aretz, which he says you could give to somebody who is tamei mace, but you can't give to somebody who is a bal keri. So if you want to give it to such a person, you have to take certain precautions to make sure that they are not a bal keri. So what is that precaution? A, they have to go to the mikvah, adds the Mishnah Berurah, even if they haven't waited till nighttime, you can still give them challah. But it's best for them to eat it right away, such that they have not urinated yet before they go, because there is a concern with urination that they become a bal keri once again. That's a big, so that's all of a sudden a big damper onto these halachas over here, right? You can't go to the mikvah and then, like, it's not, especially if they keep you waiting outside for a long time before you go on. That's a big challenge. But anyways, that is an added chumrah. Whether that is a real hakbad, I don't know. In the official guidelines about going up to Har HaBayis that is put out by the Temple Institute, they don't mention that halacha. They only mention that one has to go to the mikvah earlier that day and not be with, be with a woman after that. Now, there is stronger concern with regards to women, right? If a woman wants to go up, so she has to make sure that she's tahor. She needs to go to the mikvah. Now, there's a bit of a problem because our minhag is we don't allow single girls to go to the mikvah, right? And we are actually added, we have some added chumrah, right? There's not going to be so much time for her to be able to, for her to be able to go. And as opposed to a man who can go to the mikvah the day after having relations, a woman has to wait at least three days, but our minhag is to wait even more before she can go to the mikvah. So, for a woman to go up, a single woman has a problem that she can't go to, that the mikvahs won't let her in, and a married woman has a problem in that if it's time of the month before she's got to the mikvah, she can't go, and if it's during the time when she could be with her husband, so you got to wait a couple days before you're able to go. It becomes a little complicated for them to go. The best might be a woman who is older and sort of past that age and, whatever, but it's a bit of a more challenge issue for a woman to go than for a man to go. So what are then the problems that people don't go? What is the reason, in fact, whenever one finds a story on Yeshiva World News about people going up to Har HaBayis and about people being arrested at Har HaBayis and who's gone up latest and those kinds of things, there's always a sentence in there that says, it should be known that it was the opinion of Rav Yashiv and the official state official rabbinate of the state of Israel that no one should go up to Har HaBayis. That Jews shouldn't be going up to Har HaBayis. So why is that the position? So what is the halachic? Well, let's put it this way: what is the halachic justification for that position? So one major issue is that even though we laid it out as we should be able to figure out pretty easily where things are, it's not so clear where things are. Right. So there is a mesorah, there is a tradition that we assume that the starting point to measure everything out from is from the Dome of the Rock, is from the stone that is found under the Dome of the Rock that's in the middle of the Har HaBayis. So in theory that could work. The question just is if that's right. We don't really know that is correct. Although the Ridbaz himself said that, you could assume that that's the spot, which is going to the 1600s already. Yeah, you could assume that that's the spot. But we don't know. And when one is playing around with the Chi of Kari, so then it is unclear whether one wants to, so to speak, take that risk. The other issues are some of the issues having to do with what there are halachos called morah b'mikdash. There are prohibitions, things that a person is not allowed to do in Har HaBayis, like wear shoes, wear leather shoes, or carry a money belt like a wallet, or carry a walking stick. There are things that are included in the prohibitions of morah b'mikdash that, if one violates it, you have violated Nisa Doraisa of Morav Mikdash. Now, the flip side is that some say that is actually one of the justifications for going up. Meaning, what is the goal? What are you accomplishing? Does one accomplish anything by going there? So on the temple website it says, yeah, you accomplish the mitzvah of Morav Mikdash, right? You accomplish the mitzvah of being able to go up there and acting in an appropriate manner. That is a positive mitzvah. So this actually kind of links to what we spoke about in Perek Dalet and Mussar Day, the conflict of the children of Kahas, that on one hand, they're afraid to carry the Aron. On the other hand, it's a great kavod to carry the Aron. It's a great mitzvah to carry the Aron. So are you nervous or do you want to do it? Sometimes with great risk comes great reward. So that is one of the issues that one is... the one has to work out over there. So is there a tradition of Jews going up? So the truth is, there seems like there are. There is a 40-page article in Chakira from 2010 written by Gedalia Meir and Henoch Messner, where they discuss all these issues in great depth. And towards the end they say, okay, so what do we do? So there is historical evidence of Jews going up to Har HaBayis up to the time of the Rambam. There is evidence of Jews had a minhag of going and even bringing a Korban Pesach in the years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. There is evidence of there being shuls up on Har HaBayis during the time of the first millennium, from up till around the year 10, up to the time of the Crusades. There is evidence of the Rambam going up. The Rambam has a letter, an introduction to his commentary on Maseches Rosh Hashanah, which is odd. The Rambam didn't write a commentary on Gemara, but there is a little bit. The Rambam intended to write a commentary on the Gemara, and we have a little bit of what he wrote. So there he discusses, where he writes about coming to Eretz Yisrael, when he first went to Eretz Yisrael, he describes the day that he arrived in Eretz Yisrael, in Akka, which I believe was the beginning of Sivan, which he says that all of my descendants should celebrate as a holiday. And then he describes that 5 months later, in Cheshvan, he goes to Yerushalayim, and he visits the great big room. What's he talking about by the great big room? So it could be that he went, it's a little hard to imagine he went into the mosque, which I think was existent already, or there was a mosque there. It's a little unclear to assume that there was some kind of shul up there. But it's also difficult to say that he would just go to a different shul and call it that. Perhaps he means the Har HaBayis. But that is how it's one to take that letter is a little unclear. And after that, the trail sort of runs cold, as they point out. There's no other tradition of people going up there. And in fact, there was a tradition later on of people not going up for the reasons that we have said, because people are tameh and people are impure, etc. What about today? So today it's unclear whether it's appropriate. It's left as a machlokas. There are those that strongly advocate going up, A, because of the mitzvahs involved, and B, because of the political implications of not giving up up that territory. And there are those that vehemently against it. And there's probably room for both opinions, right? There's room to say that Jews should be going because there is because of the spiritual and political implications of doing so. On the other hand, to say, oh yeah, all Jews should just go, when even those that go, even if those that assume that it's permitted, it's only under some very unique circumstances. Right. It's only under there's a lot of preparations that need to go into it in order to go. It's not just a tourist trip. So it probably is good for there to be a vehement opposition of people that it is inappropriate to go up. So that's where we are. That's where we are today. I believe I've heard, although I tried finding if anyone wrote anything online about that, I don't know. I've heard that people asked for Schefter about what to do, and he sort of said, it's not for me to decide, it's for the Rabbanim of Eretz Yisrael to decide. I mean, he passed on it. And in Eretz Yisrael, it's subject to questions about depending on who you ask. Yeah.
I don't know if it's appropriate, but years ago I was in a non-religious kibbutz. It was like after the Six-Day War. And I was a photographer. I had like this super-duper camera, which was like very rugged, was designed. I went up with the kibbutz up there. I loaded the camera, and I'm cracked. It didn't work.
Where is there?
What?
Where is there?
Up on the mount. Up to the mount.
Okay.
And I didn't know anything. I went to loaded my camera and I turned it crank and it wouldn't work.
Okay.
So I left.
Okay.
I went there and I said, it's like, I went to the repairman.
Uh-huh.
And he said, it's like a lightning bolt hit it. Something destroyed your whole gears.
Uh-huh.
I dropped the camera.
So maybe your camera didn't work, but one could go online and one could. There are virtual tours that people have made of the Har HaBayis, where you can,
like
where people have gone around. Okay, where people have gone around with cameras and people have gone around with video cameras, and you could go. You could easily find online these various ways of seeing what it is like up there. I don't think I've been asked practically by any members of our shul that are going to Israel that intend to go, whether they should actually go or not. So I will reserve judgment until the time that I have the Siyata Dishmaya to paskin practically. All right. Have a good day.
What was the Dome of the Rock?
I would suggest checking Google.